It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. The countdown has begun. The end of Windows 7. I'll get Mary Jo to explain what that all means. We'll also talk about a leaked build of Windows 10 that implied Microsoft's doing some sort of folding screen technology. And Windows 10 build 18.3.17 separates Cortana from its parents. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 604, recorded Wednesday, January 16th, 2019. The Windows Caboose. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Capterra. Find the right software for your business with over 700,000 reviews of products from real users like you. Visit Capterra.com/Windows for free to find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. And by Wasabi, hot cloud storage. From the founders of Carbonite comes the cloud storage technology that's disrupting the industry. See for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Go to Wasabi.com, click free trial, and use the offer code Windows. And by IT Pro TV. Start your new career in IT or level up with flexible IT training from IT Pro TV. Visit go.itpro.tv/windows to take advantage of their biggest sale yet. Standard memberships, just $29 a month. And for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription, use the code WW30 at checkout. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Mary Jo Foley is here. She's all about Microsoft at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. Hello, Mary Jo.
Hello, Leo.
And from the lower Macungie Valley.
Close enough.
Home of the salted pretzel. It's Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. Hello, Paul.
Hey. I just read an interesting article about all the weird names in this valley, and it turns out most of them are just misspellings.
Of Dutch names or what?
No, of like Indian names. Oh, yeah. You know, it just, people hear a word that's like a telephone game, and now we have crazy names.
I was just about to say, it's the East Coast has all those Indian names, and I just realized Petaluma is an Indian name.
Sure. I thought I was going to escape this when I left Massachusetts, but if anything, right. It's worse here.
It's everywhere. I guess there was somebody here before us.
Maybe.
Yeah. We don't really talk about that one, Leo. I guess we could kind of keep that on the down low.
We might be immigrants. Illegal immigrants to boot.
Uh-oh.
That's crazy.
Crazy talk.
My people have been here for at least two generations.
See, the Indians should have built a wall. That's who should have built the wall. If they had only known what was coming. Okay, I'm sorry. I got dark.
It's hard not to
these days. Let's cheer things up.
Great.
Cheer things
up. Sure.
Let's talk about the death of something.
The death of Windows 7. Really?
Finally?
Really? Is that? I looked at the show notes. I thought, wait a minute, I have the wrong one. I must have gone back to 2010. When did Windows 7 launch?
July 2009.
Wow.
10 years ago.
Oh, and so that's
and
meaningful.
And so, yep.
This is the fixed term license or fixed term support or something like that. There's a kind of a new term for it because this isn't how they license things or support things anymore, right? Because of Windows 10 and all the modern products.
You can help me if you would.
Okay. We'll see.
This comes up on the radio show all the time. Is my Windows version out of, end of life? Mm-hmm. And the problem is, there are different ends of life depending on what you mean.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you explain to me what stage of hospice care Windows 7 is in, and what does it mean for end users? Like business users are one thing, and normal people are another, right?
Yeah. Yep. Well, right now they're in something called extended support. So that's the last 5 years of support of a product.
Okay.
And what it means is they'll keep giving you security fixes And there's some online help content, I believe, still available for the product. But that's it. Like, they're not introducing new features.
They're not working on it.
No.
Only to keep it secure, but not.
I mean, the irony for Windows 7, it's not, or the hypocrisy or whatever, is that the first 5 years of mainstream support was the time frame during which they could add new features to the operating system. Mm-hmm.
And they did it anyway.
They never did that. So it was a single, well, there was a service pack, right?
Service pack one.
Ostensibly. Yeah. So a single service pack. The last Windows service pack, wasn't it?
Yep,
it was. And service packs were typically about being what we now call cumulative updates. It was a way to get everything up to date in one install, but they also could add features, and they did oftentimes. I don't remember them adding any features to Service Pack 1 in Windows 7, but that might just be my memory. No. And then there were later cumulative updates for making the update process easier.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. This is now no longer clear. So,
what does it mean to people?
I thought I was understanding it, and then I didn't.
No.
By the way, is this consistent? Like, this is always, okay, 5 years and then this, and then 10 years and then this.
This is the old way of doing it. So, if from Windows 7 back, this is how they supported Windows, I would say, through the time that NT became Windows, right? Okay. I think I don't know that it started with Windows 2000.
So, for the first 5 years of the new version of Windows, you get updates.
Potentially
feature updates as well as security updates. For this next 5 years, year 5 through 10, no more feature updates, but you get security updates.
Right.
Yeah, every month you go to Windows Update, you could have whatever the
Patch
monthly
Tuesday
cumulative
happens.
Update.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then after...
It's supported.
It's supported. Point, right? Okay. That's part of my confusion is the terms that they use. I'm not sure what they mean. So
the only date you really need to know is when does extended support end?
So extended support is the one that gives you patches.
Security updates. Right.
So it ended on XP. We said everybody should stop using XP because any security flaws that come along.
And that went great. Just ask the UK medical system. Everything was fine.
Yeah. Okay. So we're approaching. When is the end of that? When do we stop getting security updates for Windows 7?
January 14th, 2020.
Okay.
That's the first Patch Tuesday of January and the last time that they're going to issue for everyone free security updates to Windows 7.
After that, Windows 7 will be like XP and orphan.
Right. Unless you're a business and you are willing to pay for Microsoft to keep supporting it for you and giving you security updates.
Okay.
Yeah. This is a problem. It's weird because a 10-year life cycle, right, a support life cycle, historically has been pretty good. You know, I think the sticking point has been that businesses typically upgrade on a very slow schedule, but that's not a problem because they're licensing Windows through volume licensing in most cases. So they get access to whatever versions of Windows are currently supported. So they can mix and match, move up, move down, whatever they want to do. But it becomes a problem for individuals because people are not upgrading their PCs very frequently now. PCs are lasting for a really long time. And I think the situation we saw with Windows XP where people basically said, look, this thing works fine. I only use it occasionally. I don't see any reason to upgrade it is going to be an even bigger problem this time around because the PCs are newer and they're even more reliable.
Plus, as we heard from Microsoft in, when was this, September, they said... Mm-hmm. As of September 2018, half of all enterprises were running Windows 10.
The other
half was running something older.
Yeah, Windows 7.
Mostly 7, maybe some 8, a little bit of 8.1, right?
Well, that's interesting. You know, I the timeframes are probably too far apart, but we also know that as of the end of last year, Windows 10 usage finally surpassed that of Windows 7 out in the world, you know, based on people hitting websites and so forth. So I think the figure was something like 43% of the 1.5 billion Windows PCs out in the world are running Windows 7, which meant that as of January 1st, I think the number off the top of my head was something like 610, whatever the figure, it was 700 something million, whatever the number was, but a big number. So there's your several hundreds of millions of PCs out in the world running Windows 7, and the clock is ticking. And I think Mary Jo and I both have enough experience with this to know that these things don't usually happen very quickly.
Yeah.
No. No. I mean, a lot of businesses are already thinking about, okay, how much is extended security update going to cost me? Because sure. I'm not going to be ready. You know?
Yeah, at least for the first year, hopefully, and take it from there, because the price goes up every year. That's the other aspect of this.
Right. And the only groups who can even get those are Windows 10 Enterprise or Education, right? Like if you're just a normal user, even if you're a small business and you're not running Windows 10 Enterprise, you can't even apply to get those.
So I don't know that we've ever discussed this, but well, we probably have. But Mary Jo, do you think Microsoft would ever extend this timeline based on this situation?
No.
Because they did, right? I think twice, if I'm not mistaken, for Windows XP. That was a special case for sure.
And they regretted it. And I think they've learned a lot from what happened doing that.
Yeah. Well, they are extending this 1 year, right? This is 11 years total.
No, it's
normal.
No. Oh, right. That's a good point. I think it has to do with the timing of the, because technically the 10-year anniversary would be this July.
And they don't want to do it July.
And I think it must be pushed forward. I don't know. It's not, they didn't technically extend it. I think it has to do, what if it has anything to do with Service Pack 1? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. That's probably what it is. I forget. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So don't buy Windows 7 today.
No. No. Don't do that.
If you're using Windows 7, it's too bad. You know what they should do starting like in July is bring back that free upgrade to Windows 10 thing.
So I thought about that. But the thing is, the problem is, you know, 3.5 years ago when Microsoft first made that offer, the PCs that were out in the world were literally 3.5 years younger than they are now.
Oh, that's true.
And that version of Windows 10 that came out originally supported silicon types that are no longer supported by Windows 10 today.
Good point.
So I think there's... it would be a nice gesture, but I think the truth is they would end up disappointing a lot of people because there might be some who said, oh, okay, screw it, I'm going to do this. And then they'll discover that because they have an older Core 2 Duo processor or whatever it is, they can't.
That's a good point. Some of these Windows 7 machines now are 10 years old. So,
right. But you know what? I think people are still buying Windows 7 machines right now. And I do. But I think they're buying them because... There are a lot of OEMs who still have stock of them and they're trying to unload the stock. But also a lot of companies want to have it be consistent in terms of what they're running in a department. Right.
They have a build and they want everybody to have that.
Well,
build.
In a company, it's a little different because you can downgrade. So you're licensing Windows at a cost. It's a subscription service. And you can choose between whatever supported versions of Windows there are out in the world. You can, like I said earlier, you can kind of mix and match. And so maybe this department has these older PCs and they run Windows 7 and these guys over here have newer PCs and they run Windows 10, whatever it is. Microsoft will never give us hard numbers on this, but it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens and when it happens and how this compares to the Windows XP thing. I also agree, by the way, I don't believe they're going to extend it officially, but we know of certain special cases. That UK thing was one of them, where Microsoft had to address a very specific threat and did so because it was the right thing to do. And they can kind of do that on a one-off private basis rather than announce to the world that there's this extending support, because that people get complacent when that happens.
They do.
I think that was the issue.
They do. And plus, you know, the other reason I think Microsoft won't do this is that they've definitely thought this through from a revenue perspective this time. And they're like, wait, if people really need the security updates, let's charge them somehow, right? And not just give it to them.
So that was the other side of that coin was something I just thought of the other day. Brad Anderson had come up with a video about the modern desktop, which is it's kind of weird to me that they have two terms for this, because what he's really talking about is Microsoft 365, right? The modern desktop is Windows 7 Enterprise. It's Office 365 Pro Plus, which is kind of the Office version of Windows 10. You know, it's serviced as a service. And then the management stuff that is sometimes based on Intune, depending on the size of your company. But because of that licensing scheme that I just described, if the business world en masse were to upgrade to Windows 10 this year, there would be no revenue bump to Microsoft at all, assuming they're all already licensing Windows, right? Because all they're doing is switching versions. That doesn't help. And so it's very interesting to me that Microsoft is pushing this modern desktop, because it kind of brings the win-win that is Office 365 to a broader audience and raises the revenue, right? So if they can get customers to upgrade from Windows 7 on-prem, with whatever ancient version of Office they're running to Office 365, I'm sorry, to Microsoft 365, to the modern desktop. What they're getting is guaranteed income every month, every year going forward. And then the user benefits for all the reasons they benefit from Office 365. It's always up to date. There's always new features. You do get the ability to control the updates if that's what you want. Not as much as some companies would like, but I actually think that is going to change as well. And so, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing because there's a question now, like, will this Windows 7 upgrade cycle trigger some kind of a bump in PC sales or in Windows 7 licenses and whatever? And yeah, you know, I the XP one was something I look back on. If you look at the chart that I have for PC sales every year, when XP went out of went into retirement that year, 2014, I think it was. PC sales have been falling year over year by a big margin. And they still fell that year, but by much less of a margin than they had before. The next year it picked up again, you know. So Windows XP had this little bump. You could see it just by going into retirement. I think Windows 7 is going to have a similar modest effect, you know, on PC sales, basically.
Yeah. The other reason, too, that I bet they're pushing the idea of instead of just upgrading from 7 to 10, upgrade from Windows 7 to Microsoft 365 is a lot of companies, when they do migrations, they replace their hardware, their operating system, and Office all at the same time, right?
You're going to take a bullet anyway.
Yeah. You know? So just do it at one time instead of having to keep going back in there and changing it over and over, right? And, that might be another selling point, right? You say, hey, you're going to only touch this one time, so do the whole thing at once.
In the modern desktop, I think, you know, the term is, I'm sure, is obviously deliberate. It's a marketing term. It's meant to evoke a certain thing. But there are probably a bunch of companies out in the world that are still hosting email somewhere or doing email themselves that still have not just on-prem software on their PC desktops, but on servers as well. And so this is kind of an interesting opportunity to bring those guys forward as well and then kind of benefit from the obvious benefits of cloud computing, where you're not managing it yourself and your business is just about whatever your business is. You know, it's not you don't necessarily have to have this huge internal infrastructure for everything. Right. So in that sense, there could be an upgrade wave that benefits Microsoft, you know. But it's not going to come from a business switching from 7 to 10. It has to it has to include more than that for it to make sense.
True.
Okay, so I don't really care about business.
Hey, what?
Well, okay, but hold on. Well, so but I don't either, to be honest. So,
guys,
that's your job, Mary Jo. Xbox, I'm glad you like your job. So,
I think it's interesting on a number of levels, though, because we've talked about Microsoft 365 for consumers, and how could that factor into this, right? Because there is another half of this issue, which is individuals running Windows 7. And what we learned with Windows XP is they just keep running Windows XP or Windows 7 in this case. I mean, PCs have, for a lot of people, have become these occasional tools. They do a lot of stuff on their phone, and every once in a while they need to type something up or use a big Excel spreadsheet or print something or whatever it might be. And the dusty computer gets fired up. Oh God, I got 117 updates. And, you know, it's kind of a miserable experience, but they just use it. I don't think we're going to get those guys. You know, I don't think anything's going to change there, right, for a lot of them. I also think, by the way, that this is as much an opportunity for Google with Chromebook and to a lesser degree Apple with iPad Pro as it is to Microsoft. I mean, those older Windows 7 PCs that are terrible and don't necessarily work very good aren't you know, creating the next great generation of upgrades necessarily, not to Windows. I mean, those people might be ready for something simpler. Which makes the timing
that's
of
not
this
what Microsoft sense. Wants to hear, of course.
No, but I think it's something we need to kind of think about a little bit because, you know, Microsoft is working on yet another light core, or whatever we're calling it, Windows 10 version that might be more appealing to those people too. So the timing of that is important, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll see when or if that ever ships.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think of people like Steve Gibson who just have vowed they'll never use Windows 10.
He's not using XP anymore, is he?
He might be. I don't know. He's using Windows 7. For sure. That's, I think, his choice. His choice.
With Windows 7, the AV vendors came out and said, we will support Windows XP after the expiration there, right? Right. So, because the big issue there is your computer's not being protected. Now, AV vendors are not offering you the same, you know, updates that Microsoft does. It's not like they're updating their operating system. But if you can throw up a shield or whatever and prevent anything from happening to your computer, I guess technically that could have the same benefit.
It wasn't just that, though, because on XP you can't run a browser, a modern browser anymore. Both eventually Firefox and Google kept going for a while, but eventually they both stopped supporting it. And at
that helps for a couple of years, right? And I think that's going to be the problem. We are going to have 2020 and probably part of 2021. There's going to be a lot of 7 out in the world, you know? Though it's expired,
I think there will. A lot of businesses didn't even start upgrading to Windows 7 until right when Microsoft introduced Windows 10, right? Like, they were that far behind. So a lot of them are like, why should I change? You know, I just moved everybody to 7.
Right.
I mean, to 10.
Well, and the peril for Microsoft is exactly what you said, Paul, that people who don't want to go to 10 and can't stay on 7 will look elsewhere.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Microsoft, unfortunately, has been either explicitly alienating users with some of the stuff that goes on in Windows 10. You know, for as good as Windows 10 is, there are obviously some issues. But there's also the kind of perception gap as well. There are, like Mary Jo said, not just businesses, but individuals who are like, and Steve Gibson is an example. I am never running this thing.
Yeah.
They don't like the idea of constant updates and all that kind of stuff. And that's a fair complaint. Windows 10 is upgraded to new Windows versions, right? Not little updates, but new Windows versions twice a year. And it receives at least 12 cumulative or quality updates every year that require you to reboot the computer. At least 12. It's actually much more than 12.
Wow.
It's disruptive.
It's not Microsoft's fault entirely. I mean, is it? No?
Well,
I mean,
look,
it's a security issue.
Microsoft architected this thing. They never fixed it. They made it worse by making it more. There's absolutely no reason for us to get 2 feature updates a year. I don't even think 1 a year is too much. But
well, I agree on the feature updates, but you've got to do the security updates.
Yeah, so I haven't heard anything from a good source on this, but I mean, there are some rumors that Microsoft might be working to help alleviate that problem. I mean, obviously, this week, and granted, this was a Windows Insider build, but this past week, four times was working, and whoop, your computer needs to reboot. It's going to happen in 1 minute.
I know, I hate that.
With no way to get around it. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm busy closing and saving and, you know, and then the thing dies in front of me on at least one of those occasions. I mean, it needs to be a little more sophisticated than it is. And, our phones reboot too, for sure. I mean, obviously there are updates on phones. They don't come as much as they do on PCs, though, it seems. I mean, maybe they do.
They do. Well, they should. They're supposed to. They don't do it while you're working on it. They do. They always wait until, you know, overnight or whatever.
Okay. That might be more disruptive for most normal people. I find the PC rebooting to be very disruptive, personally.
So, I understand why what the problem is, because Microsoft can't, they need to keep it secure, and they don't want people to use older operating systems. That's hard to keep secure.
Yeah, but the thing is, they've actually made it more complex on themselves too, right? So by moving to this scheme and then by extending the support lifecycle for various Windows 10 versions, if you look at the support matrix like a year from now, it will be worse than it is now because they will support more versions of Windows 10 than they support versions of Windows today.
Well, they kind of have to though, right? I mean, how do you get out of that?
Well, the dream was everyone upgrades.
Right. I mean, that's the same version. Worthy dream.
A big kumbaya moment for the whole world. It's wonderful.
Seems clear, though, that ain't going to happen.
No. And that's the thing I think we've learned. You know, Microsoft, Mary Jo might probably know, I think they've extended the support lifecycle for big businesses twice, if I'm not mistaken. And I can't imagine they won't have to do it again, especially with this Windows 7 thing happening.
But you still don't think they're going to just say, all right, we were kidding, January 14th, 2020.
No, I don't.
Nah.
No, because the way to handle that is the way they did handle some stuff with XP later, which was just to do it privately. You know, if there's an emergency, of course we're going to patch whatever that is. Of course we are.
Right. Yeah.
I've never been on the executive team of a company like this. I think neither of you have either. But do you think this is a conversation that's going on there? Like,
yeah, I
do. Like Russian roulette, you know what? Right?
Yeah. Like, what do we do, guys? So, what do we do?
There is no one representing Windows on the senior leadership team. So I don't know if that's something that they might discuss in that area. I mean, look, this is honestly, the truth is it's worse, but this isn't really anything new. So if we go back in time to when Windows 7 came out, you know, the truth is that at that time, businesses were not upgrading at a very fast pace, period. And most businesses were probably going every other Windows version on that 3-year plan they were on for a while, at least every other version. You know, so that's partially explains why there was a bunch of XP out in the world for a long time, and it partially explains why there's a bunch of 7. There are other factors. Windows 8 was terrible, for example, and Windows 10, I think it's great, but the truth is, like I said, there are these negative aspects to it. And there's been a lot of pushback to that, both from individuals and from businesses.
Right. And in terms of individuals, especially typical consumers and not even small businesses here, but a lot of people feel like my hardware won't support Windows 10. And in some cases, they're right.
Yeah.
In some cases, it's just a fear. You know, they're like, oh, I know my printer's not going to work with it. I haven't tried it, but I know it's not going to work with it.
Well, that still matters, right? I mean, if people feel that way.
Yeah. It does. And so
we're all
I think
PTSD.
Well, by the way, Windows 8 didn't help, right? So I distinctly remember I have a friend, Chris. He's my barometer for normal people. And I knew that things like smartphones and MP3 players were taking off because he showed an interest all of a sudden in these things. And I remember very distinctly when Windows 8, a year or so after Windows 8 came up, you know, he upgraded, bought a new computer. And he called me and he said, please tell me I can get this back to the way it was before. I don't know what is going on here. And I said, welcome to what the rest of the world is facing. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that was a cry of pain.
Windows 8 was a nightmare. But that might be, you know, when you think about people still running Windows 7, there's a portion of them that either directly experienced that or have heard those stories. And that's what they're worried.
No, I tell people on the radio all the time, no. This isn't Windows 8. This isn't Windows 8. I know you hated
it's not, but, you know, but Windows 10 rather is also not Windows 7. And
right.
But know, it's more 7 than 8.
It is and it isn't. I mean,
I know it looks like the start. If you see just the start menu and you're a normal person, you're like, oh, that's Windows 8, isn't it? No, it's 10.
Yeah,
it has that start menu.
Windows
thing.
8. Yeah, by the time Windows 8 wound down, they rushed to fix this thing, right? So they brought the start menu and the start button back. They tried to add help so you knew what was going on over on the side there. Too little, too late. But, you know, by the end of it, it actually looked a lot like Windows 10. I mean, I think there's been this one-way dead-end street quality to a lot of Microsoft stuff over the years that is today not happening, right? So when they went to the ribbon in Office, they didn't give you a way to go back to the old UI.
Yeah.
There was some version of Windows. It must have been Windows 8. I don't remember if Windows 7, but remember, at least from XP back, when they changed the start menu, you could go back to the classic start menu for a little while if you wanted to. And that gave, you know, a way for people who were upgrading to be more comfortable in the new system and adapt to the other stuff before they even thought about changing that part of it. And so we see that today in Office with the simplified ribbon. When they move to that, they're going to let people go back to the old one. But for, you know, I don't know how many years, 10 years in there, Microsoft would make a change and that was it. And you either jumped on the train or you let it go by.
Yep.
And that,
my mom's
that was a
running
big
Windows
mistake.
7. My mom is running Windows 7 on an old laptop and she will not let me change her to anything else. She's like, nope, not doing it. Not.
No, because most people, this is not an exciting thing for people. This is, they have muscle memory about where stuff is. They get job work done. They browse the web. They get email, whatever it is your mother does or any normal human being. And then they leave. They don't sit there tweaking fonts and playing with wallpapers and can I make the glass a little more transparent or that stupid stuff. Like it's a vehicle for getting work done.
Yeah. Like I'm already trying to figure out what to do with her next year. Right. Because I'm like, I've got to either put her on Windows 10 on her old machine or get her a new PC and it's going to have Windows 10 on it.
What if you just put Windows 10 on there and didn't tell her? Would she notice?
Oh, yeah. She would notice.
That's actually the problem, right? So Mary Jo jokes or is telling the truth, I guess, about not seeing like subtle UI changes or transparencies and stuff like that. Yeah. Windows 10 is not like that. You know, when you go from Windows 7 to Windows 10, it's obvious. You know, Windows 10 has what I feel is kind of a modern, flat UI, but whatever my opinions of it, it is actually completely different from Windows 7. But
could you just say... Looking. So could you just say, hey, we got a cosmetic update?
Well, everything's in the same place.
Yeah.
Everything's right where you left it.
If you did start search today, I mean, this is something that's worked since, I don't remember, maybe Windows XP, but you can hit the start button to open the start menu, start typing, and you're searching, you know. It looks a little different, right? But it works. It's the same. I mean, it's the same action. If you have that muscle memory, that still works. I mean, that's useful.
Yeah, I'm already starting to puzzle over what to do with it.
Yep.
Ubuntu Linux looking pretty sweet.
I know. Mom, what do you think about a Chromebook?
Really, the Chromebook.
Where's the logo?
The Chromebook's nice because it's a browser, and if she's using Chrome already, she's not, though.
I tried to get her to use Chrome, but no, she's using Internet Explorer.
Look, if someone is doing everything on the web and email, browsing, whatever, I mean, yeah, obviously a Chromebook could make some sense. But I don't. The problem. You know, we talked about this before. You know, the problem with the Windows user base, the problem with you people, is that it's so diverse, right? And everyone has that one thing. You know, we all have this goofy app. You know, I talked about my father who for some reason feels the need to share photo slideshows with PowerPoint for some, you know, he just, that's how his brain thinks, you know, and it's, yeah, he's broken for sure. But the thing is, if he opens his computer, it doesn't have PowerPoint. He wouldn't even know where to start.
What's happened is, it's kind of interesting is we're in, modern era, but people don't want to go.
Right.
And that's fine if you're talking about toasters and cars.
I know.
But when you're talking about internet connected devices, you can't do that. It's a new world.
It is also we have a syndrome here, don't we? Like, you know, Windows is really complex. It just is. You know, and the Mac is too. I mean, really. I mean, but whatever. Desktop operating systems, they're from a different age.
Yeah.
There's a lot of complexity to them, a lot of things, a lot of switches you can make and changes and stuff. And I think, you know, Microsoft has failed at this, but they've tried to bring these mobile user interfaces to the desktop. Apple is working on doing that with iPad apps. Chrome OS is doing it, obviously, with Android apps. You know, there's this, and Microsoft is working on this thing that may or may not come to fruition, which is a Chromebook-like OS. Obviously, Windows is underneath, but the user experience is going to be simpler. And I do think that's the way forward, but we have to, you know, there's this... this gap we have to get across first. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people kicking and screaming. I was talking to a guy on Twitter today who's like, why doesn't Microsoft or somebody make a little pocket-sized Windows tablet I can put in my pocket? And it's like, well, because the market for that is you. You know, like there are,
why don't they?
There are seven people that need that. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I don't want a phone. Like, I really want this thing. I'm like, no, I do understand.
You're the only one.
Yeah, and not literally, but I mean, like, the reason this doesn't exist is because people have made pocketable computers and no one bought them.
Right.
There's a lot of reasons for that. But part of it's the user experience. You know, Windows doesn't make a ton of sense on a small screen. And so that's something Microsoft's working on, obviously. I don't know. This is, this is a date of their own making. It's coming. Their Chrome OS competitor is not ready because the things that they've worked on in the past, like Windows RT and Windows 10S, have failed. And so, third time's a charm. Mm. That's the Microsoft story. We'll see.
Mm.
So, some other enterprise things to think about on this Windows 7 thing. Guess what? This isn't the only product where support expires on January 14th.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. What else?
Get a lot of other things.
Oh,
so
shoot.
IT is going to be very busy as this goes forward. Office 2010 support expires then. Windows Server 2008, 2008 R2, Exchange Server 2010, SharePoint Server 2010, and more. So there are a lot of products where that same date, January 14, 2020, is end of support. Which is kind of freaking out people like Swift on Security and other IT people.
But this, like, you know, this partially explains Microsoft push to Microsoft 365, right?
Right.
Because it would be horrific to upgrade all of those things at once manually, yeah. right? And do on-prem versions. Be hugely expensive up front, right?
Yep.
You know, by Microsoft 365, obviously it's going to be more expensive over time, but you are paying for it over time, and you're receiving benefits from that as well. Yep. I this is an interesting opportunity for Microsoft, really. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Maybe we'll hit that 1 billion figure at some point. Sorry, my answer promised 3.5 years ago.
Maybe.
4 years ago.
Maybe.
4 years ago, yeah.
Yep. And another thing I wanted to bring up is this week also marked Microsoft launching this thing called Desktop App Assure, which is a very interesting new program they have, but it, again, only for business customers. But the contention behind this is Microsoft believes that Windows 7 apps are a lot more compatible with Windows 10 than most people believe. So they're putting their money where their mouth is by introducing this program and saying, if you have an app and you believe it isn't compatible and you're an enterprise or an education customer with volume license, you can come to us and say, okay, I can't get this to work. I need you to help me. And they are going to fast track it with their engineers and get you a solution so that the app can run on Windows 10.
Yeah, and that solution could include them changing Windows, which has happened some number of times. And it might include working with the app maker to make whatever changes that could bring this thing over.
Or if it's a custom app, working with the with you as a customer and saying, okay, what can we do with your app to get this to work, right?
Yes. So they had numbers, right? What were the numbers on this? Do you remember? Okay. Or do you have it?
Yeah. So they said they've been testing this since the fall. And of 41,000 Windows 7 applications, they were asked to evaluate 7,000 by testers. And of that, only 49 apps had problems and required Microsoft's assistance, which is 0.1%.
One-tenth of 1%.
One-tenth of 1%. Right.
But that's the Windows user base in a nutshell, right? Because it's always that app. And that app, whatever that business is, might be that the app that is no longer supported because the company's gone. Yep. Or the app that they wrote in-house and the people that made it are gone and it's based on some old-fashioned architecture, whatever it is.
But you have to have it, right? It's like a must.
It's always the case, right? It's always the case.
Yep.
Okay, I figured it out. I got it all figured out.
I've been thinking
about this.
Okay.
Here's the problem. We keep trying to add features and modernize and stuff. What we need is the toaster of operating systems, the platform that doesn't change. It's rock solid, is simple. We run legacy apps, can't run anything new. Don't use it for, you know, you like, want the latest.
No new app platform. we're not changing anything.
It's the legacy, Windows legacy, we'll call it. And it's like a cauldron. It's like salt made of iron. And it just sits there and runs your old stuff. And don't put it on a system where you want
to. What is this magical unicorn of an operating system called?
Well,
Windows Classic?
Yeah, or Legacy or whatever. Make it really solid so it doesn't really need updates. It's just really, and strip it way back.
But what's the impetus for Microsoft to do that, right?
Because then they can have the people who are holding them back. Legacy's always held Microsoft back.
Yeah.
The people who are holding them back, they have something here. Put this on the PC in your closet that's running your ATM or whatever. Maybe that's what Windows Embedded should have been. But anyway, put this in, and then you run all that old crap on that. And then you're going to want to buy a new PC and put Windows 10 on it because that's where the future is. But if you want to keep running all this old stuff, or what about a VM like that? What about it's a VM?
This can never work. It's too good of an idea.
It exists for businesses, right? And it's called Windows 10 Long-Term Servicing Branch.
Yeah, LTS, yeah.
LTSB, which is you get a version of Windows 10 and it doesn't get updated. And Microsoft wants you to just use that for mission critical apps and medical equipment and that kind of stuff.
But a lot of enterprises move forward.
No, and a lot of enterprises are sneakily
using that as their main.
They would only choose this. This is what would happen. Yeah. You mean there's a version of Windows that will always run everything I'm already running. I never have to upgrade it, and I never am going to get the stupid new features I don't want in Windows 10. Perfect. I'll take that for the rest of my life.
And I'm saying, like, fork that. That's a fork of Windows, because you're still going to want – because that's what's holding you back, is this need to support all this ancient crap. And I understand you have to, so make a version that's for that, or a virtual – you know what? Maybe hypervisor is a solution. Make a virtual box that'll
do
that.
That's probably the way. Yeah.
There was a comedian who made a joke about this. He was talking about society, not computer operating systems, but he was basically saying that, you know, society was like a train, and the people that aren't going to move forward, you got to put them in the last car and just kind of unclip it and say sorry.
That's right. You know, it's, you know, thanks what we for call coming, it Windows the last car.
You're holding the rest of us back.
The Windows caboose.
Yeah.
Windows AC.
You know, sometimes you just got to call the hurricane.
Yeah, I know probably from a business point of view, it's not going to happen, but it is a liability. It's always been a liability for Microsoft that they have to support all this legacy code.
Well, I mean, things are changing at Microsoft. We were just talking about this, I think, with regards to Microsoft Edge moving to Chromium. We're in an era where anything is possible.
Right? Azure. Azure. Run it in the cloud.
In a VM. Yeah.
Well, the problem is, every time you say anything, not you, anyone. I mean, like, when you say run it in Azure, people are going to say, yeah, but I can't be connected to the internet. You don't understand what my internet connection is like.
That's true. A lot of these legacy machines don't want to be connected to the internet.
So, yeah. I mean, there's always, that's the thing. It's like the guy on Twitter who wanted the pocketable Windows computer. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a stupid idea. I'm just saying. Well, it is a stupid idea. But I'm saying, you know, no, that the market just isn't big enough for it. The reason it doesn't exist isn't because no one thought of it. It's because no one is doing it, because we did try it and no one bought them.
Yeah.
And but the reason your idea is terrible, because it's awesome, is everyone would want to do this.
That's bad for Microsoft, obviously.
And that would be bad for Microsoft. And I look, there's still a mentality there, you know. I mean, what kind of a company thinks it needs to add new features to a legacy operating system? Like, it's crazy. Like, it actually doesn't make any sense. And then make those mandatory?
Yeah.
No one's looking for this.
They should do, it's like what the post office does. They should do Windows Forever, like the Forever stamp.
Yeah.
Just went to the Windows Forever version. It will always work. It will never do anything modern.
It's not going to happen. The advantage of that to Microsoft.
The advantage is they can go forward with a new version of Windows,
or not. By the way, why bother? Here's an idea. We talked about Microsoft 365 and this endless licensing subscription. Let them license that.
Yeah,
you're still going to get the money forever. Nobody wants another way to make apps. Like, you know, we're done.
Yeah,
you know,
I think you got to separate out the nonsense features from real features. Like, I think people do want the new security features, right? I mean,
they might not want
digital ink, but they might want, you know.
Can I get the new security features from the Microsoft Store? Because if I don't, can we get rid of that too?
I could tell you. I actually could tell you what's going to happen, because I know.
Yeah.
You want to hear?
Yeah.
the version of Windows we think of as Windows is already legacy. The future is going to be cloud. And and going forward, because this is good for Microsoft anyway, you'll rent Windows on the cloud and you'll run it on the cloud. And then for all these people who don't want to be connected to the internet or want legacy code, whatever, they'll have this kind of semi-broken, hobbling version of Windows that's going to be Windows 10 or 7 or whatever. And then the rest of us will be using something modern, cloud-based.
Yeah, I think what you just said is correct. And what are we calling it now, Mary Jo? Windows 10 Lite, or what are we calling this thing?
So this Chromebook Lite isn't what you think it is.
I know. I keep getting the name wrong, but what's the name of it?
No, so it is right now called Windows 10 Lite, but Windows 10 Lite is more like a version of Windows 10 that'll have a different looking UI, but I think it's still going to get updates and everything. I don't think it's going
to
be
Yeah, it will always have to get updates, but if you like, and it will always have to have the Win32 stuff built into it, even if it doesn't let you run those apps, right? I mean, that's one way to solve the problem, right? Part of the security, reliability, performance issues that you get with Win32 is that you let people install those apps. So
right.
we could just take that away. We're talking about Windows 10S here, essentially, right? So yeah. modern apps only, store apps, web apps, right? And we're yeah. moving to that thing. I mean,
right. And then Win32 apps in containers, right? Or right. somehow.
Yeah. yeah. So it's right. clear Microsoft's been actually yeah. dancing with this. This is what they want to yeah. do. Yeah.
They've yeah. always wanted to do this, but that's why I, you know, sorry, just real quick, like 10S, a destination. Yeah. It's a goal. It's not something that was attainable the year they released it. They should never have released it as it was that year. There should have been a 5-year plan or whatever to get to that point. You know, the initial mm-hmm. versions should have allowed with some, you know, bickering and complaining, you to run mm-hmm. the apps you want to run. But over time, that stuff should go away or become even harder.
You know what I think has changed that's going to make this possible, really? And it sounds esoteric, but it's not. I think they were very wedded to the idea of store apps had to be these really narrowly defined UWP apps, right? And that's it. Like, there was no way to bring Win32 in there. Like, nope, we're just cutting them off. Or we're going to let them bring it in, but they have to make a lot of changes through the desktop bridge, right? Now I think the reality has set in with Terry being gone. And the reality is we need to give people a way to run Win32 apps so that they don't have to change them. They just want to run them. And maybe containers is the way.
Yeah, that's the dream, of course. Yeah. Exactly right. Right. Yep. And, you know, as the definition of what a store app has expanded every year since they first announced it, it becomes more and more acceptable, you know. And things like, I talk about this a lot for some reason. I guess it's because I use it every day. But Adobe Photoshop Elements is in the store. It is absolutely a it's a 64-bit Win32 app. It's been containerized is not the word, but it's been wrapped into a container that is acceptable to the stores. You know, it's a desktop bridge app.
Yeah.
I so very much prefer having the app that way. If I could run all the desktop apps that I do run and get them from the store, that would be a wonderful thing. Yeah. But the store is originally envisioned, right, for Windows 8 when they were called modern or metro apps or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it evolved into universal Windows platform apps in Windows 10. Not quite universally, but almost all of them to me are just garbage. Like, I'm not counting games, I guess, or whatever. But that was something that was very consistent throughout the lifetime of Windows 8 and has happened again in Windows 10. And there are exceptions, of course. I don't mean literally, but, it's bizarre how terrible the app platform is. And I say that only because I've seen the result, you know, that there aren't a lot of or any really good examples of command rich, you know, productivity focused apps that are actually as good as or as powerful as a desktop app like Microsoft Office. Yep.
Well, I think they believed back in the Windows 8 days, they believed this because of the timing, right? They believed back then people would do whatever they had to do to be on Windows. They still believed like app developers would jump through hoops, right? Yeah, yeah. And then when all these Win32 and .NET app guys were like, we're not doing that.
You want to hear the saddest thing in the world? If you're a Windows fan, you might as well just put the black on and start crying, because Microsoft had a golden opportunity to do in 2012 what Google did in 2018, which was to bring a modern app platform to a desktop platform in a way that made sense. And the way that Windows 8 should have been is a desktop operating system that worked like Windows 7 for all of the normal apps, and it had this app store in it that was the Windows Phone store. And it brought those apps to the platform. Mm. And in the beginning, of course, some of them would just look like little phone apps. It'd be kind of goofy, but at least they would be there. And then over time, they would advance that platform to support full screen or different, you know, size windows and so forth, multi-window, whatever it was, so that if you were running an app, it would work on both mobile and the desktop. Obviously, they did some version of that, but it was too little too late. That's how Windows 8 should have been. Mm. So if you look at Mac OS Mojave, it runs 3 iOS apps. In the next version of Mac OS, they're going to open it up to third-party developers so they can bring their own apps from iOS to the Mac. That's how Windows 8 should have been. Mm. You know, it's, you know, you see how long it takes. You can see how long it's taking for Apple. We don't know the end game there. We can see how long it's taken with Google and Android apps and Chrome OS. It would have taken a couple of years, but that's fine. No one on Windows 8 was clamoring for these other mobile apps that were completely different or incompatible in many cases with what was on the phone. It would have helped the phone platform. It would have helped Windows. They had it.
Yeah.
They didn't do it.
Well, I think we know, as you know, George Burns once said that it's too bad everybody knows how to run the country is driving a taxi or working in a barber shop.
Well, no, but
I think everybody who knows how to fix Windows 10 is sitting here.
No. It's on this show. Well, but hold on a second. I, to be fair, I understand what you're saying. Like, it's easy in retrospect to look back and say, should have, could have, would have. But we were saying that then. You know, the thing that was patently obvious at the time was that the guys from the Windows team went to Windows Phone and said, okay, what do you got? What are you doing? And show us. And it was like that joke I made about the, or it was a real story about a French hamburger chain where the guy went to McDonald's and said, oh my God, we got to bring this to France. But he didn't take any pictures or take any notes. He just went off his memory. And so Windows 8 to Windows Phone is like that. They're like, well, still all the best ideas. We're not going to make anything compatible. We're not going to work with you guys ever again. We're just going to take your ideas. Did anyone take notes? No, but I think it would look like this. And it was just the stupidest. It was obvious from day one it was wrong. You know, you have a mobile apps platform. Why would you make another one that's sort of like it? Like, why wouldn't you bring them together? Stupid.
Stupid. Microsoft doing it again. Stupid. You're stupid.
It's no wonder I'm a maniac. We had to live through this.
We ought to be barbers. All right. Let's take a break. Come back. I know there's a lot more to talk about, but I have to do an ad. And I think this is an ad you may be interested in, a product that probably many of you who listen would want. And you've heard me talk about it before. It's Capterra. We've come a long way in 30 years. This is exactly what we're talking about. So why does it feel like the software you use every day at work is stuck in Windows 95? Take a leap into the future by finding the right software for your business at Capterra.com/Windows. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. 700,000 reviews of products by people who really use the products, because Capterra vets them and is very careful. So you're going to get people who have used 700,000 of them who have used the product you're looking at. You can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. They've got a great system that allows you to compare similar programs. Let's say you're a veterinary office. Let's say you work in a veterinary office. And the boss comes to you and says, it's your job to find us some new office management software. We're dying with this stuff. What do? You Google it? No, you're going to get a list of just a random list, right? You ask your buddy, maybe. You ask Leo, maybe. Paul, Mary Jo, why don't you go to Capterra.com? You can not only search for veterinary office, but you can narrow it down to the stuff you want. You want it running on the web. You want it running locally. You want to be able to book clients. You want to be able to bill them. What do you need? Check the boxes. Say, I only want 4-star or better reviews, say. It'll give you all of them that match your criteria. Then you can compare head-to-head. They give you the website. This is all free. This is exactly what you want. 700 categories of software, from product management, email marketing, yoga studio management, whatever business you're in, whatever kind of software you need. Get off that old legacy system that Joe from accounting wrote in 1968 in COBOL. We can keep it running, but only if we use XP. And get the right solution fast, something modern. This is free. So millions of people now use Capterra every month. I take some credit for that, I think. We've been telling you about it for a while. To find the right tools for their business, now you should too. Capterra. Cap, like your baseball cap. Terra, like terra firma, the planet Earth. Capterra.com/windows. Use it for free to find the right tools to make this the year your business sings. Plus, your life will be easier, and the boss will stop nagging you. Capterra.com/windows. Capterra.com/windows. Thank you so much for your support of Windows Weekly. It's Paul. It's Mary Jo. It's Windows Weekly. It's an extravaganza of crabbiness, dissatisfaction, and
okay, that's fair.
anger, and Hadoop.
and Hadoop.
And Mary Jo. Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness for Mary Jo and Hadoop.
And Mary Jo, nice.
And Mary Jo. No, guys. I'm with you. It's frustrating. It is frustrating. And I'm sure Microsoft's frustrated because the clear path is difficult for them.
It is. Yeah. They don't. Who would want to be having to support all this legacy stuff, right?
It's tough.
It's not fun. They got to do it, though.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can't not do it.
No, I remember that was the story. We're going to have one Windows version to support. It's going to be great.
It was clever. I mean, that was the right idea.
You know what happens when the Pied Piper takes off and nobody follows him? You know, it's
well, you know what? I actually have a lot of faith in Satya Nadella's ability to kind of guide it in the right direction and get them the help they need.
Yeah, I wonder how much of a priority Windows is to him.
Well,
beyond the fact that it represents serious revenue.
Yeah, but he sees the writing on the wall, right?
Yeah, right. That's going to disappear, you know, or at least go down or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either. It's interesting. Anyway, let's talk about Desktop Aperture because it's generally available.
No, we already got that one.
Oh, okay.
We already checked
let's
that
talk box. About... Oh, here's another happy-go-lucky topic. PC sales have fallen for 7 years. But this is, you know, I was talking about this the other day. We were talking about smartphones. And if you want to know what's happening in smartphone sales, just look to PCs. They got so good. They got to the point where the PC from 4 years ago is not appreciably slower than the PC you'd buy today. So, of course, you're not going to buy a new one.
The smartphone thing has happened at a much faster pace than the PC market did, right? Oh, so, yeah. When you talk about like the modern smartphone arrived in 2007 with the iPhone, there was in that 10-year period, there was an explosion that it took decades to happen in the PC market because markets like China would come online or India, you know, and Africa would
come
online.
Well, guess what Tim Cook thought would save Apple? China, yeah. India. China.
It did for a couple years.
A little bit, it was great. For a while.
The problem is China also makes smartphones, and as it turns out, Apple and all these other companies don't do a great job of localizing their phones for the needs or wants of that customer base.
This is twice as much. You can get a Huawei phone in China that's stupendous for half the price.
That's right. Yeah, I just wrote about that today. The phone I'm using right now is a Huawei, and it's the best phone I've ever used in my life. It's unbelievable.
Say hello to President Xi for me.
Yeah, well, sorry, world. This is how things are going. So it's always, it's funny. Like, there's not to get honest. No, forget it. I was going to go off on the Huawei thing, but there's an Huawei anti-Chinese thing going on right now because they have ties to the government because that's not the way we've done things here. So that must be bad. they're evil,
right?
And it's like, guys, our system is kind of screwed up too. It's just we have our own way of doing things. But anyway, I'm not saying they're not spying on us or whatever, but the phone is excellent. That's all I'm saying. It's a great phone.
Which one did you get? The
820 Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a P20, which I liked. Yeah. I think they really, I got to say, this is gorgeous hardware. I wish I could put vanilla Android on it because I don't like their MIUI operating system.
You can put different launchers on if you want. But stock Android would be the best.
Yeah. And then you wouldn't worry about China so much.
Yeah, that part of it is a lot like what Samsung does, right? So it has quirky Huawei apps, some of which don't work here because we're in the United States. It has kind of a quirky UI because it's, Huawei.
Well, that's
whatever.
To your point that they make it for their market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Yeah, so here's a little taste of what the rest of the world's eating. So it's a little bit different than what we're used to here. Anyway, but with regards to PCs, I mentioned the chart I had made for PC sales. The PC market hit its high point in 2011. I think the figure was 360.4 million PCs were sold, something like that. It is amazing to me. To this day, you can find a PC or industry executives cite the 300 million whatever computers that are sold every year in the PC market. That is tens of millions over the mark. The PC business has fallen by 30% since 2011. So it is now approximately third size it used to be. That said, I did say I had some good news, and the good news is twofold. Yearly annual sales of PCs did fall year over year for sure, but it was only by 1%. And we had a couple of quarters where, depending on who you talk to, sales were either flat or were even up a little bit. And ignoring for the fact that those were mostly due to Chromebook, we'll just say we'll take the victory where we can get it. It's not totally horrible. Also, that trend has been ongoing. So the past 3 years, the sales shortfall has slowed dramatically, if you will. So it's not as bad, the cliff each year isn't as bad. The year before, sales were only down 1.5%. And so we might have reached what's the opposite of a plateau? The Mariana Trench or whatever, the reverse plateau of PC sales might have just occurred. So we might, maybe this is where PC sales are now for a while, which would be fine because I don't remember the number, but 260 whatever million, whatever the figure is now. It's still 200 and something million computers sold a year. It's not a tiny market. Like, it's still, and the installed base, of course, is 1.5 billion. So It's still, that's still big. So that's the good news. I think I'm not, you know, Windows 7 maybe will contribute this year, help a little bit. Mm-hmm. When you talk about a 1% margin, the Windows 7 upgrade thing could have an impact. It's possible sales will rise this year. So we'll look at that every quarter, but it's not as horrible as it's been. And it has been horrible for years, for sure.
I'm actually thinking of getting a new PC this year.
Really?
I haven't bought a laptop in a while.
What's your most recent laptop? Why don't I know this?
HP Spectre 13.
It's of course. 1 year old, right? Or no, you've had it for two.
No, and now it's like 3 years old. Yeah, I didn't like the new one.
Oh, you went to the old back. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You're using the one I have, the copper with the.
Yeah.
I love that.
It was too heavy because they had to go and put face recognition in it and do a bunch of other touch.
Yeah, this doesn't have touch, does it? It's their first one.
No, I don't need the touch at all. No. So,
Joe.
Yeah.
Mary Jo.
I know. I'm supposed to love touch, and it's supposed to make my life so great. I never use it, never need it.
I was looking at the new ThinkPad X1 Extremes.
Yep.
They're on a big sale right now.
Mary Jo, that would be a fantastic choice. And if I'm not mistaken, I think you can still, I don't know this year, but as of last year, you could still get an X1 Carbon. Mm-hmm. Without touch. Don't recommend that. I think touch is awesome, but you know, I think you could get it without touch. There was even one year, a couple of years ago, they didn't even offer touch on the X1 Carbon. You had to get a Yoga to get touch, but they reversed that because so many people complained.
Yeah, you know, it gives me a little more battery. It makes it a little bit lighter. And if you don't use a feature, why suffer with all those extra things?
Sure.
Well, that's great. And then when you put Linux on it, it's just wonderful.
It works great.
Yeah. I'm running actually Linux on my HP Spectre 13. Mm-hmm. And it runs beautifully. And I don't need touch.
It's the most hurtful thing you've ever said, but it's up
there. I need a good keyboard and something thin and light. I'm an ultrabook person all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't use, I know your lapability issues with Surface Pro, but if you could stand Surface Pro, the screen is beautiful. The keyboard's great.
I don't like the screen ratio on the Surface Pro.
Wow. Surface laptop, nothing.
I think you want a ThinkPad.
I can't believe you don't want to use Surface laptop. That's my favorite laptop.
What about the Swift 7?
It's so heavy.
That's the successor to your beloved S7.
You know, I'm scared of the S7 now because the one I have kind of didn't work after I started upgrading it to later versions of Windows 10.
They did a weird dual drive thing.
They did. It messed everything up, that dual drive thing.
Come here, Joe. You don't like touch. What do you think about the new MacBook Air?
Hey, dude, no. That's like an ultimate no.
You know what? I love
my MacBook Air screen has little fingerprints all over it because I keep trying to touch the screen.
Yeah, me too.
Wow.
Yep.
I actually love it. I thought it was going to be too slow because of the Y processor.
And yeah, no, it's great.
It's exactly right, and it's super thin, super light.
I believe Surface Laptop is actually a little bit lighter, if I'm not mistaken, but they're in the same ballpark, for sure.
I don't know. The keyboard keeps falling off for me.
I never liked the Surface Laptop.
No, I like it.
No, you're talking about Surface.
Oh, the laptop. Yeah. No, I like the laptop. Actually, I did like the laptop.
You know what? If they hadn't forced you to use Alcantara built in, it might have been a little better, but it was a little tippy.
By the way, I actually agree that Alcantara should be optional. But if you buy the base configuration, I think it still comes in a non-Alcantara version.
Does it? It never did before.
No, it did.
Does the new one? Surface Laptop one.
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember.
Which was so weird. Anyway, I don't know what I'm going to buy. I'm not in a rush to buy one.
XPS 13. You saw that, the new one?
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
There were a bunch of nice ones at CES that won't be out for a few months. That would be.
Yeah, I can wait. I'm not in a huge rush.
And Gadget liked the, they said that was their pick of the show. We had Sherilyn Lowe on Sunday. She liked the XPS 13.
Yeah.
Now that the camera is in a nose, up the nose camera, that's a big improvement. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. It's always been nice, and now they fixed the one issue. So
that's great.
Really beautiful. It's touch though. Well, they might have a non-touch version.
They used to. I don't know, it's 2019 though. You know, I think this just comes down to the way PCs are made today, and basically everyone wants touch. It's probably harder to get a non-touch screen.
Yeah, than I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you were making them for the enterprise, it probably wouldn't matter as much.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Oh,
anyway,
sorry.
Touch isn't a total deal breaker. I just think I don't need it. But
you know what you need? You need a folding machine.
Right.
You need an Andromeda.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting. I read this, your story, 19H1 has built-in foldable support. I'm going to have to get used to saying
foldable.
That.
Foldable. I know. Hard to say.
Foldable.
Yeah. So let's step back and say exactly what's going on here and what we think is going to go on here. Mm-hmm. So what happened was there's a site called BuildFeed, which is a site that used to leak builds of Windows 10 and I think previous versions of Windows also. And over the weekend, they started posting all these different versions of Windows 10 that aren't released publicly. And one of them, version 18313-1004, had this label on it that said RS, which is Redstone, Shell Devices, Foldables. So that immediately set off like people going crazy, going, okay, this is Andromeda. They're going to do Andromeda. You know, Andromeda was Microsoft's supposed phone sized dual screen machine that I reported last year was canceled or at least put on indefinite hold. So I will tell you, I am pretty sure Andromeda is still not coming to market. I know there are some people who have heard that it is, but I still hear it is not. And the reason it is not is Microsoft doesn't want to make a phone. If Microsoft wanted to make a phone, they wouldn't be telling people to go buy iOS and Android
phones.
That's
true. Yeah.
Right?
That's fair.
Yeah. So what I do think this foldable thing references is Microsoft is going to do some work on Windows to make it work on foldable PCs and devices. There are OEMs of Microsoft who have already announced they have these coming, right? And some of them are dual screens. Some of them are other kinds of foldable devices. So I think they have to do the work on Windows to support these OEM devices. The question everybody has is, will it also support anything from Microsoft that the Surface team is building? I think it could support the same code name Centaurus that we've talked about before, which, you know, we say it's a successor to the Andromeda. What it really is a really small dual screen laptop. That's what Centaurus is. So I think Microsoft is still toying with the idea of bringing this out. I don't know if they'll bring it out this year. I don't even know if it will eventually make it to market, but I think there's a chance. And if it does, it'll obviously take advantage of the work that it's doing with dual screen / foldable Windows. So that's what's going on. I see so many people going, it's Andromeda. I knew it. And that's what they're going to announce at Mobile World Congress. I'm like, guys, no. I saw several people on Twitter today saying, oh, here comes Andromeda at Mobile World Congress.
Any hint of anything like this that they come out of that would work.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard that the Mobile World Congress thing Microsoft is doing is HoloLens.
Me too. Right. So today, today we get invitations.
Oh, good.
To Mobile World Congress, and the speakers from Microsoft who are speaking there are Alex Kipman, who's the father of HoloLens, Julia White, who's the corporate vice president of Azure, and Satya Nadella. Okay. So what is this thing? It's got to be the HoloLens, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Alex Kipman has nothing to do with Surface.
No, he does not. So
I'm actually going to go to this event because
you're going to Barcelona.
Alex Kipman and everything he does.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's like a Kipman fan. You follow him?
Yeah. I love Alex Kipman. He makes total sense to me.
Yeah. Go to all his concerts. Yep.
Yep. I have all of his albums. It was, it was 4 years ago this month. We were up in Redmond and they announced HoloLens, if I'm not mistaken. And
been 4 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
I know.
Yeah, because Windows 10 shipped in July 2015. So that event would have been roughly 6 or 7 months before that happened. That's where they announced HoloLens. And was that where, I forget when things happen now, but I think it might have been where he announced that the Windows 10 upgrade was going to be free as well.
Maybe.
Of course, that involved phones at the time. I might be off on that one. And then, the 1 billion thing, I don't remember. I don't remember when things happened. I'm old. But
yeah.
Anyway, still, that's
I distinctly remember the event.
So
yeah,
if they had said, you know, we won't really be shipping these in quantity till 2020. You would have said,
well, no, you know, they they always kind of hedge their bets on what the audience was for this thing. But I think the thing they've learned over, you know, the past 4 years is there is a market for this device. And it's a kind of a niche-y thing. It's a particular verticals in the business space mm-hmm. where, you know, this kind of thing does make sense. There are automakers using it. NASA's using it, you know. It's like that computer the guy wanted, you know. He's like, there are some out there for sure. As a consumer device, it's not there, right? And it was never aimed at the consumers for sure. And then the Windows mixed reality stuff that they did that is sort of like HoloLens. I wouldn't say that's taken off in any appreciable way, but
no.
It's still hanging out there. I mean, it's still part of a, you know, it's like Windows mixed reality is to HoloLens, like Xbox One is to Windows 10. They're sort of the same platform, but not exactly.
Kind of, right. Yeah, so we don't know much about this next HoloLens. We know a few things. We know there's going to be an AI, custom AI processor in the device that Microsoft built. We think it's going to be Snapdragon 850 based, so it's going to be an always right. connected PC. We're pretty sure the Kinect sensor package that Microsoft announced at Build last year is going to be part of this also. So what's it look like? I think it's going to look like HoloLens. I don't think it's going to look hugely different, just maybe somewhat thinner, somewhat lighter, somewhat more portable. I think it's still going to be that big kind of clunky.
I bet they get a big battery life push from the Snapdragon. I think that's going to be huge for it.
Yeah.
We talked about this before. You know, the first one was based on Intel, but it only runs a very specific set of startups. You're not going to run like the Win32 version of Microsoft Office in this thing. So switching to ARM doesn't hurt anything. It's perfect. You know, you get all the benefits of ARM with none of the detriments. Mm-hmm. And we learned this at, it might have been CES last year. Maybe it was the year before, that they canceled the original second HoloLens because it wasn't enough of an advance. And so this is technically the third one, but it's the second one they're going to release.
Yeah.
And I assume that they will, maybe fix is the wrong word, but improve the field of view as well, which I still see.
That's really why you're going, isn't it? You want to make sure it's not a mail slot.
I have, I'm a closet HoloLens fan. I kind of don't appreciate the grief I've gotten over this. No, I don't.
Out of the closet, Paul. Into the light. It gets better. Maybe.
It will get better.
It will get better.
Yeah, still, I think it will.
Listen, some of the best Microsoft demos I've ever done were HoloLens, right? I mean, as inappropriate as this product is as a mass market device, which it isn't, it was never meant to be, some of the demos are astonishingly good, right? You know, the thing where you're fixing the electrical outlet and the guy's helping you via the video thing floating next to you, it's genius. I mean, you know, the video game where the creatures are coming out of the wall, which is something no one should ever do with HoloLens, but it's whatever. It's fun. You know, it's
we had a demo about a year ago of a HoloLens competitor called Meta. It was really cool looking, and they had things coming out of the walls, and it was fun. They just went belly up.
Yeah.
Gone forever.
I remember when we did the live demo of HoloLens on Windows Weekly when we were...
The airplanes flying around. So it was like it was a real time view of the planes landing and taking off from Schiphol. And you could kind of, you know, see them in the room. I mean, there wasn't much practical. It was a demo, right? So it's not like you can grab a plane and do stuff to it. But you could. I mean, that's the point of it is this is a different way to visualize data. And it's really interesting in that case, I think, to see what that looks like around you in a very immersive way. It's cool.
I think it's very interesting. Julia White is part of this discussion because somebody has to be the person who's like, guys, you know what this is all about though? This is about intelligent cloud, intelligent edge, business devices, right? It like bring it back to reality and not just talk. I mean, they're going to definitely talk pie in the sky futures because Alex Kipman is there, but it's also good to remind people, like, there's a real device here for real customers and, you know.
I think the big difference between now and 4 years ago is they have all the real world experience. They know what worked and what didn't work. And they can say, look, here's a product that's going to meet real needs. And I think that's great because HoloLens has always had an almost Microsoft researchy kind of, you know, far out there kind of vibe. And the fact that it's found some kind of a home and a market is great. And now they can improve it. That's good. Hmm.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them do well with it. There's one less competitor.
Sure.
You want to take a little tiny time out, and then we got to talk about Windows 10. We haven't done that yet.
Oof.
Oof. Oof. Maybe we'll throw in some Xbox. I don't know. No, maybe
not. Is there Xbox?
No,
I can't remember. I don't think there is.
There is none.
I took it off.
That happen?
I removed it. I removed any reference to it from the notes.
Xbox is vestigial.
No more. Our show today brought to you by Wasabi. It's hot. Hot cloud storage, to be exact. Wasabi's data storage that's 80% cheaper and 6 times the speed of the industry leader, AWS. It's really good. And I have to say I have a little bit of an insight into the beginnings of Wasabi because it was started by two good friends of mine, David Friend, who was the founder of Carbonite, but before that he invented the ARP synthesizer. He's really wonderful, serial entrepreneur, smart guy. His tech guy, Jeff Flowers, for Carbonite, they came up with a way of writing data sequentially on a hard drive that ignores everything, you know, just boom, blasts it on there. And that made it 80% cheaper and 6 times faster than the other guys. You know, we're going to all be moving to the cloud. There's no question about that. Companies need to store data in the cloud as backup for services. There's all sorts of reasons you might want to go to the cloud. Wasabi is the – I want to add them – I know there's three big names. Everybody looks at Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. I want to add Wasabi to that list because they offer a value proposition that's second to none. You know, it's estimated that by 2025 – there'll be 163 zettabytes in the cloud. That's 163 and 21 zeros. That's crazy. Wasabi, at a fifth the price, 6 times faster than Amazon S3, is very hot. And they have some features that I really like. I think that you'll really like. That's why I want you to try it out. Being able to efficiently store your data is critical. Being able to rely on it is important. In some cases, Wasabi storage is more secure than your local storage. I think in most cases, more secure than your local storage. Wasabi's HIPAA, FINRA, CJIS compliant. They have this great device, a hardware device called the Wasabi Ball that lets you migrate petabytes of data simply, quickly, and securely. I want you to try Wasabi. There's so many other really cool features. I'm a big fan of what they call immutable storage. Sometimes you put stuff in the cloud and you don't want it to be changed ever. Immutable storage. It's protected against accidental or malicious deletions or modifications. That's one of many, not all of it's 11 nines data durability. 11 nines. I did mention 6 times faster than AWS's S3, 80% less than AWS. No charge for API calls, unlimited free egress. I can go on and on, but here's what I want you to do. Go to wasabi.com, click the free trial link, and you're going to get unlimited free storage for a month, but you got to use the code Windows. Wasabi. Yes, like wasabi. You know wasabi. Wasabi.com because it's hot cloud storage. Wasabi.com. Get the free unlimited storage for a month when you click the free trial link, but you have to use the code Windows for that special offer. Otherwise, it's just a terabyte. Wasabi. Give it a try. You know what? You can get a promotion if you save the boss 80%. And it's how much faster? What was that? They said 6 times faster. That's pretty good. And I'm telling you, it's really good hot cloud storage. Wasabi.com. Click the free trial link, enter the code Windows, and get an unlimited free 1 month trial. David and Jeff really know what they're doing, and they've created an amazing company. Wasabi. Wasabi. Wasabi.
Maybe if Mary Jo gets another cat, that could be his name.
Oh, Sriracha and Wasabi. That's a great idea.
That would be cute.
That would be so cute. I could get you some free storage for the cat, too.
I don't know, guys. One is a lot to handle.
No kidding. But, you know, sometimes if there's somebody else for them to bother,
I know,
they don't bother you as much.
Right before the show started, oh, man, he was like on a rampage. I was just like, yeah.
We have multiple animals and they're all jealous of each other.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't work, you know, the way you think.
The dog the dog is like Marge Simpson. Like, the cat will jump on Stephanie's lap and the dog is over there on the couch with her beady little killer eyes. And she's like, oh, man. Like, she doesn't like it.
No, man. Jealous. Yeah. Our cat, we have two cats who are jealous of each other as well.
Yeah.
Okay. That was our interlude. Now we're back.
Let's cat talk Windows. Tip of the week.
Cat tip of the week. Let's talk Windows 10.
Yeah.
So a bill came out right before the show.
Oh, what a surprise. Yeah, that never happens. Yep.
Never.
18.317.
Actually has something interesting in it. Yeah. We've heard this was coming, and here it is. Search and Cortana are now separated.
What?
Yep. What? It was Manjo, time.
Why do you, were they ever together? The real, yeah, what's the real reason? I've seen lots of speculation. Certainly this will help clear the way for third-party assistance in Windows, which I'm sure the PC makers wanted.
Yeah.
But what do you think? Do you know anything about why?
Why else?
You know?
Yeah.
What's the real reason?
So my thinking is when Microsoft first came out with Cortana, it was from the Bing team, right? Like, all the work was done by Bing to build the knowledge base that became Cortana. But now Microsoft's putting this new unified search experience in a lot of their products. It's going to be in Windows, Office 365, in Bing, you know, that thing that was called Bing for Business, and Edge. And so if you're doing that and you're taking that very specific search experience and bringing it to all these products, it doesn't make sense to have it intermingled with Cortana now, because Cortana has becoming a very different thing. It's becoming more of a built-in productivity aid to things like To-Do and Outlook. And it's not what initially it was supposed to be, which was kind of like a standalone personal digital assistant.
Yeah. Remember, we had talked to Terry, and he was talking about how Cortana, even as recently as last year and today, I think as well, is not made by the same part of Microsoft that makes Windows, right? So they have competing schedules and desires and, you know, market goals and so forth.
Yeah.
They're never really on the same page. You know, Windows is updated constantly and Cortana is not. I don't know how else to say it. But it's updated on a different cadence, I guess, to use Microsoft's terminology.
I think it's great.
That must have played a role.
It was also so confusing to, I think, normal people especially, but even to non-normal people. Like, when you click that button that you thought was going to be search, then you're like, am I using Cortana?
Yeah,
right? Exactly. So I think it's cleaner to have them separate, and it makes more sense. It's more like in your own mind, you can be like, okay, this is Cortana, this is search, right? These are two different things, even though Cortana can do searches.
I look at it like, now I have two things to remove from my taskbar instead of one, you know, because I mean, part of my pregame checklist, every time I start a new PC up, get rid of Cortana, get rid of my people, get rid of Windows Inc. Workspace, if that is there, get rid of Task View. And in some cases, these are things I just don't need the buttons for, right? So Task View is Windows key plus tab. Cortana, you can bring it up just by searching from the start. You don't need the button there. I mean, it still works, like I said. So if you know how this stuff works, it's just needless clutter and space-robbing stuff.
Do you keep the search box, you said, or you don't?
You know? No, because I can just hit start and type. That works.
Most people don't know that.
You
like
can turn
normal.
It off. I didn't know that. No.
Yeah.
Nice. I'll be trying that at home.
it just takes up too much space. I mean, especially on a laptop. I mean, you know, in this desktop computer, I probably have, I don't know, 8 inches of space there. But on a laptop, once I have everything pinned to the bottom that I want, it's just not a lot of space.
Oh, so you just uncheck show Cortana icon and it goes away.
Yeah. Yep.
That was easy.
It's the best Cortana tip of all time.
Disable Cortana.
But so one thing to, if you're listening to the show and you're thinking about installing this build 18317, if you use Windows Subsystem for Linux, do not install this build because it's broken and it doesn't work at all.
The new one is broken. The very latest one.
Yeah. This new build that came out today. If you need WSL, do not install today's build.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
They added that to the notes later. but it's
after they found out.
Oh, by the way,
incidentally,
now that we've gotten you excited about the new
build. There are a ton of known issues in this build, so make sure you look at those before you install this build.
This is why I don't do insiders anymore.
Yeah.
I just got back on because I feel like it's winding down, and I want to make sure I know what's going on
in
this release.
Winding down. Holy cow.
I know. They said inbox apps are locked as of this build. Wow. So, yeah, they're definitely winding down.
And honestly, God, that stuff hasn't changed at all, has it? I mean.
Well, snipping tool, you know, right?
Changed. Okay, but I mean like the major apps like Mail, Calendar, Movies and TV, what Edge.
Yeah. Well, Edge. Edge is about to change pretty big, but.
I don't think they've done anything in Edge.
Not yet. Well, because now they're going back to the drawing board.
No, right? No, of course. But I mean, it still seems like they could. I mean, people are going to get this thing and use it.
Yeah, true.
For many, many months to come.
Very true. Yeah. So, yeah, that's today's build. And then this was really weird. Yesterday, a whole bunch of cumulative updates went out for various versions of Windows 10. So if you were running 1703, 1709, or 1803, you got a pretty hefty pack of cumulative updates this week, which isn't Patch Tuesday week. Just time for more cumulative updates.
Something must have happened, right? And this is the thing I was talking about earlier. Remember I said everyone running Windows 10 will get at least one cumulative update every month. That's the Patch Tuesday update. Yep. But what we've seen over the past year or two is oftentimes there's at least two every month. And this is a great example of that. Yep. There's never any explanation, you know.
No.
They love updating Windows.
I mean, in some ways I'm like, okay, it's good. If things are broken or if there's a security issue, whatever, I'm glad you're updating it. But also it feels like, why are there so many updates? It feels like a lot.
What's the rationale, right? So obviously something's happening. I mean, something is serious enough that this can't wait till the next Patch Tuesday.
Right.
But they never really come out and say that.
No. Yeah. And then there was another kind of one-off thing that happened yesterday, which is a cumulative update went out for last week's 19H1 fast ring build, but it went out to testers, right? So this has happened a couple times. They've put cumulative updates out to the insiders and the fast ring to test. But that's not a regular thing that they do, or maybe it soon will become a regular thing. I'm not sure, but there were like three updates in there.
I was wondering if that wouldn't provide some clue to this week's normal cumulative updates, that there was something important happened and they were fixing something bad, and it was so bad they felt the need to fix it in this insider build, even though they were going to release a new insider build a day later.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because they won't tell us.
I love all the speculation and ingenuity.
We don't know. Yeah. Well, you really can't tell. You look through the list and you're like, okay, what made them rush this out?
Which one of these is deadly?
Right.
Maybe Donna Sakaar fell on the ship button.
Yep. There are three pieces of meat on leaves. One of them will kill you. Enjoy. Yeah. I don't know.
Yep.
Now, Mary Jo will discuss Microsoft's latest partnerships.
Customer wins. That's such an enterprisey phrase. Look, it's a customer
win. I actually thought your video froze. You held that pretty well.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think we lost Mary Jo, and then she blinked.
Let's call Mary Jo back.
It's like with the cadavers on the table face. in the movie, and you see him flinch a little.
No, I was trying to emulate the face of that little girl who I sent you. On Twitter yesterday when you said that. Yeah. Anyway.
What you reminded me of, sorry, real quick, was the end of every, those police movie,
the
Lieutenant Drake, you know, where they would do like a fake freeze frame where everyone would just stay still.
Yeah.
So the guy would be pouring coffee and it would still pour, even though it was. What was that called?
70s.
That's me, guys. Very 70s. All right. Here's how I'm going to talk about this. So, if you've been watching Microsoft, you realize lately a lot of the stuff they're talking about are customer wins. They call them partnerships, as I've talked about on the show before, but they're customer wins. But now I'm kind of thinking, okay, there's actually a way to look at these that are interesting instead of just, they get another customer win. Like, there are some trends here that we should be noting on Windows Weekly. when we look at the what's happening with these customer wins. So one that a lot of people have talked about is, if you notice, Microsoft's getting a lot of Azure wins lately. And why are they? They're getting customers who don't want to go to Amazon because they compete with Amazon. So Kroger, Walmart, The Gap, and as of this week, also Walgreens. They're all choosing Azure over AWS. And the reason is they're afraid of Amazon. Sadly, when a lot of these get written up by press, it's Microsoft is getting into the pharmacy business or Microsoft's going to work in the grocery market now. That's not what's happening. They're actually helping the customer by giving them technology to go compete with Amazon. It's not Microsoft competing with them except AWS versus Azure. So that's one trend that you're starting to see more and more. Azure getting more business because people don't like AWS because AWS competes with them. Another one at CES, we talked about this a little bit on the show last week. You know, there's a lot of hype around Google Assistant, and there's a lot of hype around Alexa at CES, and the word you never heard was Cortana, right? But if you look at Microsoft's press releases that came out of CES, they aren't really out of the virtual assistant market. Instead, they have this thing that's very non-sexily named the Virtual Assistant Accelerator, which is a collection of patterns and reference designs that Microsoft is providing to customers who want to build their own version of Cortana. It's not labeled Cortana, but everybody now has their own like concierge or private digital assistant. And it's actually based on Microsoft technology. You would never know that because the customers don't mention that. But BMW, LG Electronics, and UEI last week, all of them announced digital assistants either in cars or in home hubs. And they're actually built on top of Microsoft's Virtual Assistant Accelerator. So
I think that's smart for Microsoft.
Me
and this
too.
Is something we talked about probably a year ago, that Cortana would be more of a back end kind of a thing.
Yep.
Because they've done the work that these companies can't do themselves to handle voice recognition and natural language processing and all the stuff that goes into a digital assistant. This is a great opportunity for Microsoft. Even though it's not forward facing and it's not in a smart speaker that you can see in your house or whatever.
Yep. And one more. Many people have heard of this thing called JEDI, which is this big Pentagon contract that's coming up for award in April. It's a $10 billion cloud contract. It's like the big kahuna of all cloud contracts. And everybody's been vying for it. Microsoft, Google, Oracle, IBM, Amazon. Now the bidding is kind of pretty much down to Amazon and Microsoft, people believe. And if you watch how this lead up is happening, Microsoft is getting more and more government certifications under their belt. In fact, this week they announced Outlook Mobile is now certified for use by the DoD. All these little pieces are starting to come together, and they're just trying to show the Pentagon, hey, we've got every piece of the solution that you could want. We've got all the parts. They are all government certified up to the level that you require. So watch as we move towards April. You're going to see a lot of activity between Microsoft and AWS in the government space. That's my third trend.
Is this Jedi thing related to the Star Wars SDI thing? Because if it is, even if it isn't, like Lucasfilm should sue these guys. What are they doing?
Joint something something defense initiative. Joint Enterprise Defense Initiative.
Jedi, I like it.
Yeah. But yeah, I know. I'm not much one for customer stories, but I have to tell you, lately I'm trying to find the silver lining in these things. And I think the way to look at them is you can pick out trends about what Microsoft is having success and not having success in selling when you look at these things.
But Microsoft is competing with Amazon at retail, right?
Yeah. Well, no.
Did I understand what you said?
No, that's the point. They're not doing Amazon. Never mind.
That guy never listens.
Never mind.
But I mean, what you're really saying
What are you really trying to say? A partnership is not a customer win? No, I'm not trying to say that.
Was Jedi, was that the one that the Googlers decided not to pursue?
Yes.
And then Jeff Bezos said, well, it's patriotic to do defense work. We're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. And that's, then Microsoft said that. Yeah,
oh, it was Microsoft
said it's patriotic.
I think Bezos also said that. And
did
of
he?
Course,
yeah.
Microsoft
yeah.
got it. That's it. That's a big contract.
No, yeah. So April is when it's going to be awarded.
Oh, it hasn't been awarded yet.
Not yet.
Oh, so it could be Amazon still or Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, Amazon definitely has to
compete. Huawei should go for this.
Maybe Huawei. Yeah.
By the way, breaking news. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to botch this a little bit. But the U.S. government is about to sue Huawei for stealing trade secrets from U.S. tech companies.
Yeah. This is really – Poland went after a Huawei – executive, right? And Canada has.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is interesting.
Sure. Yep.
Huawei fired the executive when Poland arrested him for spying. Oh, he doesn't work for us.
Yep. See? Told you we weren't spying.
Just kidding.
Just kidding.
I don't even know who that guy is.
I'm starting to think maybe there's you know, where there's smoke, there is fire. Mm. But I still like those those Huawei phones. That made 20.
Well,
let me,
I mean, obviously, when you talk about state secrets, it's espionage. It's a different thing. But espionage exists between companies as well. And so you could look at a company like Samsung, for example, the worldwide leader in smartphones, which spent several years ripping off every single thing Apple ever made.
Right.
And then started innovating on top of that. Now they're very well respected. Like nobody out there is ever
they
like, well, I'll never buy a Samsung thing. I mean, it's bizarre. Like, I mean, Chinese tech companies basically did the same thing.
Well, here's the real truth, and I just got off an interview on Triangulation on Friday with this Shoshana Zuboff, who wrote Surveillance Capitalism, which really indicts Google and secondarily Facebook, and she includes Microsoft as taking you know surveillance beyond the level of just customizing ads to the point of, you know, not only predicting behavior but influencing behavior, and she says that's, you know, that's going to be ultimately a threat to democracy itself.
Arguably already was.
Yeah. Well, it's a really well-written, compelling book. But the point being, Google doing it and Facebook doing it. So, you know, where are you going to, if you decide, oh, I'm not going to buy a Huawei phone or any product from China, where are you going to buy a phone?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yep.
They're all doing it.
They're all made there, all of them.
Well, and even if not, our government and our corporations are spying on us. So, and maybe in a more, I'm not so worried about what China's going to do to me.
Oh,
right?
Give it time, Leo.
Well, give it, But no, honestly, I don't think China has global dominate. They want economic domination. I think they want to dominate. They want to control the people inside their borders. They're authoritarian, but they really want to be an
economic
partner globally.
It's going to be a beautiful, you know, this is going to be a moment in the future, hopefully after my time, where Chinese are making stuff in the United States because it's so cheap to do it there.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
there's lots of labor. They're not very skilled, but
they forgot how to do everything.
Yeah,
they can't fix their roads. They can't fix bridges. They don't know what's going on.
Everybody's slinging, says friendly Oklahoma. So I understand. I think as an individual, using Huawei products is not necessarily an issue.
Yeah. And my Huawei phone agrees with you. It just put that idea right into my head using some kind of infrared thing.
Suddenly I feel like I have an urge for Mugu Gai Pan.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
I don't know why.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's take a break and then we come back. Tips, picks, and beer. Oh, I like the name of this one. But first, a word. We should be doing a Grammarly ad with that beer name, but we won't. We'll be doing IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV started with us, I believe, you know, really. I mean, so here's the story. Tim and Don, who were IT trainers, classroom, traditional IT trainers, saw a twit. They were fans of the tech TV days, and they said, you know, this would be a really good way to do IT training. What if you had a kind of like an internet TV station that was broadcasting IT training and had on-demand shows in every area of IT, that we used hosts that were fun, engaging, smart. This could be a big deal. And IT Pro TV was born. They came to us. We've been telling you about them for a few years now. And I have to say, what a success. They opened their new Gainesville studio a couple of years ago with five studios, all running at once, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Doing great IT training. The turnaround, about 24 hours, then they get in their on-demand library. Now there's thousands of hours of binge-worthy on-demand training at IT Pro TV from CompTIA. You know, that's the A-plus and Security Plus and, you know, all of those plus certificates to Cisco. EC Council, that's the Certified Ethical Hacker cert, VMware. They've got great hosts. Don, of course, still hosts, but so Ronnie Wong, I love Ronnie. They had a cake in, I think, a cake in the shape of Ronnie at the grand opening with beard and all. Cherokee's great. They have really good hosts. It's a talk show format. If you're watching live, just like us, you can be live in the chat room. They do a lot more, and I think they're a lot more engaging, and they're a lot less expensive than going to a, you know, fancy, expensive technical school. And it's a lot easier than trying to do this on your own. In fact, it's a lot cheaper than buying those study materials. You're going to love IT Pro TV. And by the way, if you're looking to get a job, this is one sector that is going to hold strong for a long time to come. We need more IT professionals. There are lots of jobs available. I love IT Pro TV. You will too. 2019 is a great time for you to start a new career in IT or to kickstart your existing career. Get that cert you've been missing, the skills you want, and it's fun. Visit go.itpro.tv/windows, and you get started with IT Pro TV. This is a great time to do it if you've been putting it off. Right now at IT Pro TV, their video-only standard membership is listed. Normally, it's $57 a month, which I think is still a great deal considering what you're getting. It's on their site right now at a special $29 a month. But we can take another 30% off that. If you go to go.itpro.tv/windows, that's a new URL, by the way. They added go at the beginning. So it's go.itpro.tv/windows. Use the code WW30. You'll get an additional 30% off. That brings it down to about $20 a month. There's no more affordable or more engaging or more powerful way to get those skills. Go.itpro.tv/windows. Use the code WW30 and you get 30% off. And by the way, that's as long as you stay active. So that could be forever. And I know a lot of people who have the certs who are working IT professionals who continue to go to IT Pro TV to learn. You kind of make, it's like Twitter. You make friends, you get engaged, and you're always learning something new. A lot of teams use it too. They've got a great team portal so you can do training for your IT team. You should check it out. You can go to go.itpro.tv/windows and find out more there. And do use the code WW30, 30% off everything. $20 a month. IT Pro TV. And don't forget, that's a new URL. go.itpro.tv/windows. All right, let's see here. I think, Paul Thurrott, it's your turn for a tip of the week.
Yeah, first I just wanted to thank Brian Worling. Posted a clip from the show I was referencing, which is Police Squad.
Police Squad.
Where they do a fake freeze frame at the end of every episode. So there's one where the guy's pouring coffee and it just keeps pouring and the cup falls and it just goes on. It's
is it on Twitter?
It's on Twitter.
What's Brian Worling's handle?
Well, just look at my it's on my feed. I forwarded it to Mary Jo so she could watch it. It's beautiful. There's actually two freeze frame sequences in it because they do an epilogue as well. It's excellent. Like the guy walks up to the wall and because it's fake. It's a TV show, so the wall just falls down. This is excellent. The show's excellent.
This was a TV show.
Yeah.
It wasn't a movie. It's like
no, but they became movies.
Movie.
Remember, they made these movies. They made
The guy who with the that made the sounds with his mouth. That one.
No. That's Police Academy.
Oh, this is Police Squad.
Yeah, but Police Squad was a TV show, and then the movies. What the heck were the movies called? There were three of them. O.J. Simpson was in them, unfortunately.
Naked Gun.
Hi, Frank.
Naked Gun.
Hey, Ed. Just got back from the arraignment. Sally Decker is going to have to get her teeth straightened in the Statesville prison from now on.
What?
And there'll be.
They always have the tall guy. He's like, you got a little something.
Get something in the side of your mouth, Al.
It's so tall. Wait, okay, now here's the end.
Parole violation, huh? Well, what are we going to do about that?
Forget it. There's some things you can't deprive a man of.
Well, I'll drink to that, Frank.
And then they freeze. And then the guy doesn't get the message, so he's walking around.
So they ended every episode like this, where there was like a...
Peter Lupus. He was in Mission Impossible. He was the strong man.
Be sure to tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.
Love it. I must have missed that one. That's funny. That's very
good
funny.
Music. Like, yeah.
Yeah, the beginning sequence, they're having like a gunfight, but they're both shooting from behind barrels, and then they zoom out and they're like right next to each other. Like they're not shooting down an alley, they're like right next to each other.
Yeah, this is
the one. This is a terrible thing. Yeah.
Makes people forget their duties as citizens.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing for sure. If Gunderson wants to run a protection racket, from now on he's going to have to do it in a Stateville prison.
Say when, Frank.
When?
That's the coffee pouring.
Eventually he drops the cup and then it keeps pouring on his hand.
Leslie Nielsen found a whole new career.
He was a serious actor before that.
And then he did Airplane and everybody said, oh, that's funny when a serious guy does deadpan humor.
Yep, he was great at it.
He was the best. Okay, now, surely it's time for your tip of the week.
Yeah, so this isn't available everywhere yet, but Twitter has finally bent to our demands, and it is bringing an option to its apps that will allow you to actually view your tweet stream, or whatever we're calling it, in chronological order, like God intended. I believe it's only available on Android today, but it's coming to all the Twitter clients, so... that's something I never understand. Like, you know, Facebook does this too. They put up things we think you're going to be interested in, and you know, they promote stuff to the top. It's like, no, I just want to see my feed. You know, I don't. So this is something I want everything to be like this. So that's good news. If you have that, if you use Android, you can use it today, and then it should be everywhere else pretty soon. This other one, it's kind of a weird topic. You know, a month or so ago, I started investigating whether it made sense or whether it was even possible to kind of use Android but without Google, you know. Not because I necessarily want to cut Google out of my life, but because a lot of people that read my site do, and it's kind of a contentious issue. And I don't think it is actually possible, to be honest. But
failed experiment.
But there are things you can do to minimize Google in your life, certainly if you use an Android phone. But in the course of doing this, I started investigating other kind of Google alternatives, and one of the ones that kind of intrigued me was a search engine called DuckDuckGo, which is now available at duck.com, which, you know, has actually been around for several years. I think it might even date back to 2013 or so. It's actually, you know, it's been a while. And they, unlike Bing or Google, which basically sources everything internally, these guys use what they call, I think it's 400 plus input points, and one of the big ones is Bing, obviously, to try to create a simple search engine that works and looks a lot like Google search. It doesn't have any of the kind of esoteric stuff like... It's basically just, you know, it doesn't have news. It has web search. It has image search. They've added maps recently, which is powered by Apple Maps, which is kind of interesting. And I got to say, I just kind of use it and I don't really think about it. And the only two things I've noticed, one which is positive and one which is negative, is that they don't have the problem that Google had with image search where they could no longer allow you to download images right from search. Which is super useful for someone like me because I will often go to like want an image of a Microsoft device from Microsoft.com. And I actually then have to go to the page that Microsoft has, or whoever, wherever I'm going. You oftentimes cannot right click and download. So then I have to look at the source for the page using the Chrome debug tools. It's like on and on it goes. But with DuckDuckGo, you can just right click and download it. And it's like, yeah, this is the way the web used to be. This is nice. So I like that aspect of it. The only negative, and it's a minor one, is for me, when I look up stuff that's in older websites, if the website URL has changed at all or if the site has changed hands or something, I'm finding that a lot of the older stuff is not available from their search. So I've had this thing, like, for example, if I go back to the super site, which was my previous site, they don't actually use that URL anymore. So if I try to search for a topic on whensupersite.com, DuckDuckGo cannot do it. Google search will do it, and then you click on the link and it loads to whatever their terrible new URL is. But that's kind of interesting. And so, but I, you know, again, I'm not a big fan of it. Seems to work fine for me. So what do I need anything else? I mean, I, like a lot of people, I use internet search every day. I can't configure this as the search engine on my phone. If you go into Android search, you don't, or Android settings rather, you know, it's not an option, at least on the phones I have. So I can't use it there, but it kind of looks like Google search did like 5 years ago, I guess is how which is fine. I'm not there for the pleasant UIs and stuff. I mean, who cares? I think it works great. And but the thing they do, and the reason you might want to use this is they don't track you at all. There's no tracking of anything. So your searches are private. They're not stored anywhere. They're not sent anywhere. They don't, you know, follow you around. You don't have any sense of real sense of history or whatever. You search and you go and you leave and that's it. And
how do they make money?
A volume.
make it
no, they're no, they're in the. I think it's the Yahoo ad network.
So they do have ads, but they're just not. They're not.
They don't seem objectionable. I mean, if you're used to Google search, you're not going to be surprised by anything here. It's not. It's not.
You know, I don't find ad customization really changes my ads that much, anyway.
So. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how they do it. I think I've talked about this before, but when I go to Instagram, I see ads for things I kind of like. You know. Like
oh, Instagram is I was talking with my son about this. He's wearing a CU Boulder sweater, really nice varsity sweater. He said, yeah, Instagram. And I said, oh, it's interesting. They knew you were at CU Boulder, right? He said, oh, that's the least of what they know. And those ads are really good. And I stopped using Instagram partly because I was buying too much stuff, partly because it creeped me out that they, you know, were so effective. Yeah. So exactly what we're
Instagram has
about.
Been the first experience I've ever had where targeted ads
so good.
Were like, yeah, like actually I don't mind these in my stream. Like, and I am very anti ad for the most part. And there is something about it.
I'm wearing Instagram underwear.
Awesome.
I mean, I bought
slim wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they see your pictures, right? And they kind of can figure some things out.
I don't know. Whatever it is.
I mean, they should just be selling me sushi.
They're
I don't
Facebook.
Know what they're,
let's
they're,
not forget. So if you use Facebook,
I know. Well,
they know everything.
I mean, they give me all cat everything in my feed.
Yeah, see?
Oh, really?
See?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't. Who you follow. I bet you follow a lot of cats.
I use Facebook that much.
I do.
This is pretty much coming right from. I get the whole, you know, there's the minimalist stuff that people seem to like and the.
Yeah.
The new ways, you know, it's like it could be a cooking device or a, I don't know, like a,
you know what? I don't know
charger.
What they want me to buy because I'm not on it.
You don't go anymore. And, missing out, Leo.
I miss your pictures. I do miss, but Lisa will show me if there's any good pictures of Sriracha.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, no, not again.
No, I saw your Christmas card. She knows, though, because every time we'll be sitting watching TV, and she go, oh, look. And I said, Lisa, I'm off Instagram for a reason. But no, really, it's cute. Look. And,
it's just a picture.
Is it just a picture?
Okay. See the whole scanning. Leo is on Instagram.
He's back. He's back. Quick. Yeah, I do not. I have to say. No, I don't want to. I'm not going to proselytize. You do what you want. You be you.
Yep.
I'll be me. Anyway.
Oh.
Tip.
I mean.
That was your tip. DuckDuckGo, which is a good tip, I think.
App pick.
Or your app, rather. Now it's time for Mary Jo's Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Yeah. So Paul and I have both heard from people this week who've been wondering where Windows Server 2019 is, the ISOs for it, in terms of being on the evaluation center. It's weird. It came out like months ago and people are looking to download it and try it. And they're like, hey, it's not there. So I went back and looked at the Windows Server account on Twitter. And I found out right around Christmas time when no one was looking at Twitter, they posted that when we started publishing the media for 180-day evaluation, we found an issue with it and we are fixing it. So this was December 28th. I asked Microsoft this week, where is Windows Server? Like, where is Waldo? Where is Windows Server? And they said they had nothing to say or share at this time, whatever they say these days. But a couple other of my contacts said they believe the ISO for Windows Server 2019 will show up on Evaluation Center in the next week or so. So if you're looking for it, it should be coming in a week or so. And what went wrong with the evaluation media? I don't know. They wouldn't say.
Can we call this evaluation center gate?
Yeah, we can. Let's do it. Yeah, so that's my tip. Hang on. It's coming. The ISO for Windows Server 2019 evaluation center mode.
Codename.
Yeah, so we talked about the HoloLens 2 for a moment earlier. The codename for that is Sydney. Thank you to Brad Sams for finding out that codename for us.
Hello, Sydney.
And I saw Brad was chiding Frank Shaw on Twitter today saying, why aren't you having the launch for HoloLens in Sydney since that's the codename?
He just wants a free trip to Sydney.
Yeah, but anyways, this is the codename for the next HoloLens, which as Paul mentioned, it's kind of HoloLens 3 because there was a HoloLens 2 that got canceled. And that's part of the reason why there's been 4 years between HoloLenses, right? There was supposed to be one. They decided not to bring it to market. I guess it wasn't improved enough. And so this, you could call it HoloLens 2 or HoloLens 3, however you want to count. But the code name for it, regardless, is Sydney.
Did you get your invites yet, guys?
Yep, we got them.
What time is, when is the Microsoft event? Well, I guess we'll probably want to cover it.
That's a good question.
Sunday night at 5 p.m. local time. So it 24th. Would be 1 p.m. here, 10 a.m. your time, I guess. Is that right?
Sunday.
We could do it, 10 a.m.
6-hour time difference, Sunday, right? So it would be 11 right hours the, to here, or 11 a.m. here.
Come in early in for Boston. The tech guy.
Yeah. I mean, we're assuming they're streaming it. They haven't said that definitively, I guess. Right. But
that actually, I think people would be interested if they have an update to HoloLens. That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
All right. If they do stream it, we'll cover it. Yep. Otherwise, we'll talk about it here on Windows Weekly. Speaking of here, it's time for beer.
The beer pick today is from one of my favorite breweries in Brooklyn. Yes. Little local beer pick. It's called Grim Double Negative. That's why Leo was saying it would be good for a little words. I'm not exactly sure why they call it double negative. What it is an imperial stout. Mm. So it's very big, bold, chocolatey, bitter, roasty, all the things you want in an imperial stout. It's also 10%, like many imperial stouts. So, you know, it's a big beer. You can't have too many of them. But I would say because it's so delicious, it's definitely worth taking one for the team and taking the 10% ABV.
Take one for the
team. Isn't that double negative a positive?
Yes.
Double negative is a positive, right? So
that might be why. Say yes to the double negative.
Exactly. It's really good, though. I've had that beer a few times. It's in bottles. It's on draft around New York, but it's also for sale in other places in bottles. I don't think in cans, but if you ever get a chance to try it, it's definitely worth trying.
Good. Delish.
Delish.
Delish. You're not going to Barcelona, Mary Jo?
I am not. That's too
trying
much.
Trying to get her to go to Hawaii. She's like, no. I'm like, how about Barcelona? She's like, no.
You know, I love Barcelona.
Like, where will you go?
No, guys, I love Barcelona. But you know what? MWC is like one of these things. You're like, so many people.
It's another
not
CES.
Enough hotels. It is. Right. I don't really want to go.
It's a CES that's in Barcelona.
Yeah, that's
I know.
True.
But yeah, you know what? It's just for one press conference. I could just watch it on the stream.
Good. Well, maybe you'll join us if we do coverage. You can. You can
going,
pop in.
Going.
You're going.
Paul's
You're
going. He'll be there. That's
I like when I look out at a year and I have like international travel like just planned. You know, it's nice.
Yep. It is nice.
Is it a week from now?
No, a month.
No, it's February.
It's February. That's right.
That was my first thought was like, wow, they're really cutting this tight. There's no way I can make this. I was like, oh, it's the end of February.
Next
Wait a
month.
Minute.
Next month. Good. That'll be fun. Yep. We do. Meanwhile, we're here every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch live, go to twit.tv/live. And if you are watching live, by all means, join the other kids who are watching live in our chat room at irc.twit.tv. A very, very nice place to hang your hat. You can also get on-demand copies of everything we do, including this show. And in this case, it's twit.tv/windowsweekly. Well, twit.tv/WW. Shorten the typing. And we have audio and video available there. Of course, you really should just subscribe in your favorite podcast app. Then you'll get it automatically. Or you can ask Cortana to play Windows Weekly podcast.
I challenge you to say that without laughing.
Well, also Echo. Or
all those other ones that no one
ever, others, the other ones other no one things. Ever heard of. In almost every case, if you want to listen to the live stream, you say play Twit Live. And if you want to listen to an individual podcast, say play Windows Weekly podcast and it'll play for you. I used to do that with The Daily, the New York Times podcast. And then there's somebody in Europe who has a podcast called The Daily. And all of a sudden, my Echo is playing this weird British podcast.
That's amazing.
And I thought, the New York Times is not going to be happy about that. Nope. All right, kids, have a great week. And I will talk to you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.